Okay, no touching the mics, but feel free to shuffle the cards however you want to, and just have fun.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay, what forms of self-segregation exist today? My name is Martin Small. I have a company called RSL, and I'm just asking this question.
Hey, and my name is Johnson Sammy. I am an artist at the Harrison Center. And to answer the question, what form of self, I will have to get back to that.
My name is Sierra Johnson. I'm an artist at the Harrison Center. I think that it's really easy to stay with people who are like you. I think it's comforting to be, especially for Black people, to be in the presence of their own culture and to see people who look like them. But I think it also can be limiting because the world is so much more than just your culture. I think that it's easy to stay on, right, like your own side of town. I'm from the East Side, and I tend to stay on the East Side unless there's a very specific reason to come across Meridian, like this, like today's conversation, got me to come across town and mix it up with people I don't know. So it's really a matter of learning to be uncomfortable and explore what's outside of your kind of regular routine.
My name is Marcus Johnson. I'm the son of Sierra Johnson. I feel like four forms of self-segregation that goes on is what she said, just staying around your own people. I tend to like to hang around like people and other people of color rather than Caucasian. So it just makes me feel more comfortable.
To come back to that question, this is Johnson Simon. I would say I'm also real comfortable when I'm with the disability community because I know I could be free myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes there are some things about my disability I try to be so much that my peers are like, oh man, I wish they didn't get, I hope they didn't see that part or use that against me.
Right.
But you know, it's all the mind game, you know. Mm-hmm. You get so self-conscious where you overthink stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm once again, Martin Small, RSL is a company. We have a podcast called the Road to Legacy Podcast. In New York City. Now, I'm from New York, and coming to Indianapolis, and all my friends, and not all my friends, but some of my friends in New York were like, there's actually Black people in Indianapolis. You know, they're like, you know, is it really? What are you going to Indianapolis for? What's going on in Indianapolis? Why? And then, you know, it's because we segregate ourselves in certain forms, even in our minds, when it comes to thinking about, you know, if there's others out there, and especially if we don't travel. And I've met people in Harlem, where I'm from, and here in Indy that just don't even leave their blocks. So yeah, I think we do. I mean, separate ourselves in certain forms. I mean, that's all I can say about that situation.
I mean, you need spaces where you can be your full self and be comfortable, and I think that that's super important, but I think it's also important to mix it up, to make a point to get out of your zone and out of your bubble, because you never know like what you could find or what you could discover.
Yeah.
You could be in a whole different type of community if you would just leave your box and leave your zone. Like, I wouldn't have discovered anything like this on the East Side, at least not that I know of. I might discover this similar kind of community on the East Side by being here. Somebody can tell me, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening, and I'm gonna say some local names, P30 and at Easter Star, we are doing this work. but I wouldn't have found that out without leaving my house.
Right.
Or that that your podcast is out of New York. Like, I'd have never met you without coming over here.
You met me now.
Yeah.
For example, one of the things that I also look from my point of view, from people that are from different cultures that are not American, they could get real comfortable with it. For example, I'm Haitian. When I'm around my Haitian family and I'm eating the Caribbean food, I get real comfortable
because
it's home. It's almost like, even though we're in a whole different country, but you still got that root of where you came from.
That root of where you're from, right. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it just changes my way of thinking. You know, just changes my way of thinking in so many ways when it comes to dealing with people that are melanin deficient, if I must say, meaning that I was asking the doctor, Dr. Alex Lichtenstein, a couple of days ago about why he would do this exhibit, because he's a white man. And, you know, there's so many people that are in the cause and in the fight for the rights, for our rights, even in some cases more than we are. You know, we have exhibits of here of people being lynched, and which helps us, and art, you guys are artists, so art of people being lynched. And then sometimes the younger people don't see it as being important. They don't see it as, they don't look towards the vote, in other words. I know I'm all over the place, but voting, they don't look towards family like we were talking about earlier, how we all got along. There was a certain time, no matter what went on, family came through. Even in racist situations, there would be family that would help you and back you. So the question that I was just looking at one of the cards here, knowing that we're in a school that I think, I don't know if I'm wrong or right, that was built by the Ku Klux Klan back in the day, right? I think they called it the Thomas Jefferson School at one point, if I did my research. Now it's the Crispus Attucks School. They brought people from all over to teach at the school. It was the number one school where basketball kind of came out of, also education kind of came out of, and to have this exhibit in this school. So the question is how should Indianapolis deal with the legacy of the Ku Klux Klan's control in the 1920s? Like, this is the home of the Ku Klux Klan. So it's amazing how we have this beautiful art and all of this stuff here in the school, in a city that Ku Klux Klan was born from.
That's a good... Well, for example, I'm a big believer of the Bible. For example, I believe that you can't allow your past, like, the thing that happened, the bad thing that happened in the past, determine your future.
Right.
Is that you get a whole new slate, and you're not using that to make you who you are today. You could take some of the history and you could learn from it. And then instead of being divided, you could be like, okay, and this is what my great-great-grandparents did, what can I do, or what can I take from it, and how can I make it my own?
Right.
No, I'm in agreement with a lot of what Johnson said. I think it's really about acknowledgement, like saying, like, yes, this building was built by the Klan, and that they did exist, and that they were in the state, and they were very much running, you know, a racist government and everything.
Exactly.
But then it's about, right, like reclamation. So if you can take that history and then make something as wonderful and incredible and as important as Crispus Attucks, then you can take anything and turn it, like, into gold, you know. it's about that acknowledgement. And I think it's like saying like the facts of even like further than the Klan, but like even going back to slavery, saying the facts of chattel slavery and not like denying it in schools or anywhere else.
What is chattel slavery? What is chattel slavery? Some people don't know what chattel slavery is, believe it or not. But please, tell us what chattel slavery is.
Well, I try to make the distinction, and I'm not a historian, but like as opposed to indentured servitude, where you might like owe somebody and go work for them willingly to pay off a heavy debt, which has its own set of problems. But and then there's like chattel slavery, where people are forced into servitude through like violence and racial discrimination, and like all the very bad things that you associate with slavery are included in chattel slavery.
Isn't chattel slavery also that? Yeah, that's a great definition. But you know what it is? I think it's also generational, right? It's the only time that they put people in bondage that their children's children's children. Was in bondage forever, and that's what chattel slavery is. And then that's why when they tell us that we have to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, or black on black crime, or all that stuff, you have to look at what chattel slavery is about. I'm not gonna say you have to look at what chattel slavery is about to actually understand that. That's deep. I forgot all about. Oh man, that's deep.
Speaking about chattel slavery, how much for them a breed? It's about saying that, hey, your grandparent owed this, so you gotta pay that. How much do you got to pay that?
Right.
Does it keep going, or when is the whole debt is paid? It's to one person's judgment. If they want to, they can make it. Keep going on.
It's. I mean, being in this museum and seeing this art is amazing. How I just wonder. I'm not an artist, but I've taken kids to Africa before, to Ghana, and the only thing that got the kids to understand, youth to understand, not just kids, youth to understand each other was either art or sport. So you guys being artists, have you seen, I've seen art that brings people together. I've seen your art, Johnson, that brought some people together and a couple of other things. But it's amazing how this art here, even though it's sad, but at the same time it teaches, it's amazing how this art brings people together.
I got a question for you, Martin.
Yeah.
When you took the kid from America to Africa, when they came back, how did it change their worldview?
That's the reason I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. I took some kids to Ghana, and I did it so they can see what they are missing. What they're missing spiritually, what they're missing when it comes to their education. Some of the kids in my community in Harlem did not know where Egypt was. They watched the Ten Commandments on TV and they thought it was in Europe. Right? When they found out that I didn't even know where it was until I went to the military.
Oh, wow.
Really? And that's how crazy it was. So that's why I decided to take some youth to Ghana years ago. We went out there. We looked around. The question was, how did they feel about it? They understood how important it was to be an American, number one. Then they really understood the Middle Passage, because we went to a place called Elmina Castle, and they showed their lynchings and what we had to go through for 400 years of slavery in Cape Coast in Ghana. When we came back, they really understood, where they come. But you don't have to go all the way. You can go to West Virginia. You can go to Appalachian Mountains, and you can see the crazy stuff. But what's good about it is that you can see, if you go to the Appalachian Mountains or you go to West Virginia, you can actually see white people having less than what we have, much, much less, because there's more poor white people than there are black people. So when we take them to those areas, which I've done, and we have them have their own welfare cards, we take them to those areas, and we show the difference. You're still the same, even though you're white and you're black. You still have the same welfare cards. You still have the same whatever SNAP benefits.
Yeah.
But you, these white people don't have water, and you have Air Jordans.
Yes.
So it got to show, you know, the different. It helped them understand that some of the things that are being presented to them are not the truth
for
in this country.
For example, I could say from my point of view as a Haitian immigrant family and becoming the first generation to come to America.
Yeah.
So when I spent the first 5 years of my life in Haiti, because of my disability, I wasn't able to go to school in Haiti. And then when I came to America, I saw all the wonderful privileges I have now.
Because of your disability, Johnson, you couldn't really go to school in Haiti.
Because I couldn't walk, I used to crawl.
Oh.
So they wasn't equipped, and you know, Haiti is like a third world country. If you have a disability, you're not able to give to the society because it's already a poor country.
Right.
So when I came to America when I was 5 years old in 1995,
right,
I saw all the things that I have access to, and I became really grateful because I was like, oh my goodness.
Because of that.
If my parents did not work hard for me to come to America, if I was still in Haiti,
right,
I was going to be like a vegetable.
Yeah. So, Johnson, you came here. You came here with a disability, right? You got here. How did you feel, though, man, about seeing, disability or not, how did you feel about seeing stuff like unmasked, like lynchings and the racism in America coming from a country that had social problems and had financial problems, coming to a country, especially, did you come to Indianapolis or you've been all over the place?
West Palm Beach.
Oh, that's Florida, that's even crazier. How did you feel when you got older, went to college, and you started learning about all this black hate? Hate between against black people.
You know what? That's a good question. Because, you know, I became the first independent country, the first black independent country. So there wasn't no slavery, but because we chose to be an independent country, we didn't have no riches. And that's one of the reasons why Haiti is one of the poorest countries there are. You want to be a free country, we're not going to give you no riches. So even though they became the first black independent country, because they didn't have no riches, that's one of the reasons why Haiti is like a third world country.
Yeah, Haiti, right.
It's amazing why I came to America. I gotta tell you, when I was in Haiti at a 5 year old, I never seen a white.
Oh, you never saw a white person
I never
in
saw
Haiti
one.
When you were 5 years old, right?
So it was all new when I came to the airport. I'm like, oh my goodness, I never seen it. So, but even though when I came to America, there was more privilege, but then again, I do see the segregation between immigrant or even or being a different skin color.
There are
a lot of disadvantages.
Yeah. But the hate, I mean, not to totally interrupt, but I want to ask your son. Right? And you have to speak up a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you experienced racism and hate in any form? Because you were saying earlier that, you know, we were talking about how we separate from each other, from any white people or any people that, not even just white people, just people that aren't African American towards you.
I can't really think of a time I've actually experienced racism. have you seen it, you know, happen in the world?
How have you seen it? Where did you see it at?
In the systems of prison life in America,
uh-huh.
in America, such as redlining, really all types of disadvantages just to living as a black person, but at the same time, my mom showed me that mm-hmm. it can also be an advantage.
How do you think we could fix it, though? Because, you know, young people, you guys got the answers. How do you think that we could kind of, I mean, how do you feel about the vote?
At times, it seems kind of rigged as white people have a lot of the money, so they can control more, they have more access to things, such as like lobbying. They can basically buy lawmakers.
Mm.
They give them expensive vacations and all these things. So
uh-huh.
they can rig the laws against us. So I feel like we may be not reparations, but.
Yeah, we need reparations too.
Like reform
mm-hmm.
law system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do other? I'm just curious because I heard a kid yesterday tell me that he's not voting, and then he said that, and he had seen this exhibit, and he says that he thinks that this can happen again. But I told him, well, you know, you need to get the vote to get the right. He was like, he's not voting because he feels that, you know, it's not fair. And then he brought up that Donald Trump was the best president. This is a young black kid in the hood, was the best president in the United States. Now, I understand him. Let me tell you why I understand him. I understand him because he thought that the stimulus checks that came through during COVID came directly from Donald Trump. Right, because he signed them. Donald Trump pulled those checks so he could sign those checks to make it with a marketing scheme, right?
Mm-mm.
But the checks come from Congress. They don't come from Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So my question, civics, do you think that youth should learn more about how the system works, civics?
Mm.
How, and do you think that'll help them try to understand the system, American system?
I do think it would really help if more young people systems in place because of the internet we have more communication between each other than we ever have, so I feel like if we could raise our voices enough, we definitely could change things.
That's a good question. That's a good answer. I mean, I think that things have changed. Some people don't think that things have changed. I mean, we could take our art and we could put it on the walls and nobody's tearing them down like they used to. We can, you know, walk freely and not worried about being snatched up in the street
mm-hmm.
by some, you know, but our democracy is fragile right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm thinking.
I know.
Like my
yeah, we just have a conversation.
I was always, right, like a big, especially in my youth, and then I'm kind of coming back to it now in my adulthood, but I was really civically engaged, and I was a fan of, like, history and politics in school because I wanted to know how things actually worked,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot, like my son said, they have a way to talk to each other that we've never had before, but it's about harnessing that to and using it to actually work on the way things actually work. There's a lot of like screaming on the internet, but I don't know if that's how we change laws.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we need to organize and be and have a more like to narrow our focus on things that can actually like help us in the long term. I think we spend a lot of energy kind of like feeling things and that
right.
doesn't always turn into results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like, right, some of our, I hesitate to even call them opposition because mm-hmm. I feel like there are people who need to be brought in and like retaught, but like people who are supporting Trump, that's because they don't know how it works.
Right.
They saw his name on the check and they were like, Trump giving me the stimmies. I love it. Like they're gonna flip it. Yeah. They're gonna live good for maybe 6 months, and then they was on. They're Trump supporters. But if you understood that money came from Congress and that you're represented in the Congress by, you know, your congressman,
and
state representatives, then you know who actually gave you that money. That his name is on it, but it's just a brand name label. Mm-hmm. That's not who made the sausage.
Right.
The people who make the sausage are accountable to you, and you can cajole them if they want to stay in office.
Right.
You can write letters,
you
can hoot and hollering.
Right.
Like, we can do all the things to that person who actually has their roots in your, you know, congressional district or whatever.
Yeah. Did you hear what happened? Did you guys hear what happened in Louisiana this weekend? They had the election for the governor. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a Republican governor in a while. Mm-hmm. I think there's 900,000 black people in Louisiana.
Damn.
Only 21,000 came out to vote, and they lost the election to this Trump supporter guy. Now, it's super important. It's super important that we need to come out and vote locally, like for our little representatives, for our chiefs, for our lawmakers. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what the system is, and I'm not saying anything bad against our people or what our people. But we need to, like organizations like BLT, need to come into the communities more. Organizations like Urban League or whatever it is need to come in and then go into the hood, and actually go into the hood and actually do stuff like that. So lynchings and stuff like that doesn't happen anymore. You know, that's just my opinion. You know.
I think one of the biggest things we have in today's society, especially in the black community, if you think about doing Martin Luther King, everybody had agreement and they were unified and they worked together.
Right,
for
right.
them, they said, you know what? They want us to sit in the back of the bus, we ain't gonna ride the bus.
right.
Everybody involved the bus, and they saw the impact.
Yeah.
So we're forced them to change the law.
Mm-hmm.
We are black people staying together today and helping that community still find each other or trying to build each other's ego, but work together. The same thing happened during the Martin Luther King era.
Yep.
It would be way more easy today with the technology.
But nobody's stepping up. I mean, what happened to the two? Because Martin Luther King's era started in the mosques and the churches and the synagogues. We don't have that anymore. We don't have that like we used to. So it's and then we're human. And that's the issue. We're human. And we do some crazy, human beings do some crazy stuff. You see what's going on in Israel with Hamas and all in Palestine, and then people are picking sides as human beings. So it's kind of hard. I'm just glad at the work that I see in this museum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad at the work that we're doing collectively, the little bit of work that we're doing. I say little bit because there's a lot of stuff we got to do.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of stuff we got to do. It's not. I mean, we had Obama in office, and nothing really, really changed. I'm not saying that he, you know, was the savior of saviors, but just like in Louisiana now, if something goes wrong, if some kid gets shot, God forbid, in Louisiana, or something happens in Louisiana tomorrow, what are they going to do? Our community is going to stand up and say we need Al Sharpton here, we need Crump here. But what happened when we were supposed to be voting? To vote these people out of office?
It's going to be
killing
people
our children.
Away.
Right.
It's going to be, yeah, do this. And then a couple years later, it died out.
Yeah, that's right. And
come
then,
on.
But that doesn't happen in other communities. It doesn't happen. Jersey City, I'm from New York. Jersey City was usually, there was a part of Jersey City that was mostly Italian. Now it's all Eastern Indian.
Wow.
Because they voted and they put an Eastern Indian governor, mm-hmm. I mean, not a governor, a mayor mm-hmm. in their office. And they are killing the game right now in their community. So, you know, you got Eastern mm-hmm. Indians come here. They haven't been here in a while. And we've been here for over 400 years.
That's
200 years or whatever it is.
That's the problem. We are not supporting
each other. We don't support each other. And that's the thing. So that's why we need exhibits like this mm-hmm. to continue to show us. I mean, I'll give a quick story real quick. I was in New York at a museum, and I took my daughters to, they were young. They were 8, 9, and I think 12. Mm-hmm. And I took them to a lynching exhibit. I was telling mm-hmm. Dr. Lichtenstein about this. I took them to a lynching exhibit where they had all these photographs from these artists of lynchings, like true lynchings. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of the city. I took them in there, and as I was walking around, I saw a whole bunch of Hasidic Jewish families, and they were looking at the stuff. So right before I left, the curator came to me and said to me, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Why are you bringing your children into this exhibit?"
"What do you mean?"
So I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "They need to learn." And then I stopped for a minute and I said, "Have you asked those Hasidic families, that Hasidic family that came in with their children? Why are you asking me? Do you not, you're the curator, you're the person that put this out. Do you not want us to see what happened to us and others too? See what happened to us? Do you not want my daughters and my children to know what's going on? Why would you ask me that?" That hurt me, and that kind of fueled me to come to exhibits like this and to look at art that black people make. You know, it's just amazing. That's just a little story.
I can't believe you asked me that question.
I mean, I think we encounter things like that a lot, though, that idea that we should protect children from their own history, mm-hmm. that it will upset them. But shouldn't they be upset and then learn how to deal with it? You know, and I think that that's, like, to kind of try and bring it back locally. Indianapolis, because of its history with the Klan,
right.
is the perfect place to stage
yes,
that kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes.
And then, like, right, the other thing we have here that besides like a history of the Ku Klux Klan involvement is a strong faith-based community. So I think we have like the perfect grounds to plant those seeds now mm-hmm, to like mm-hmm. do the next phase of like MLK's work and things like that, because it is a place with that kind of history, and so it's the perfect place to reckon with that history. So like that's how that goes back to one of the first questions we started talking about on the record, is like, how does this school and its history with the Klan connect, like how do you take that and turn it into gold? It's by constantly confronting those things. It's by taking your children to an anti-lynching exhibit. It's by me bringing my son here and getting him involved in this conversation. Because like one day my time to do the work will be over and it'll be in his hands or in your daughter's hands, and they have to know so that they can confront, so that they're not, so that they don't think that the stimulus check comes from Donald Trump. They have to know
right. How
things actually work and how things actually happen, so that they're not just out here walking blind. You can't exist in a world like that. I mean, you can, but it doesn't help us go forward at all.
It doesn't. And what hurts us also, what hurts us also is our class. Mm-hmm. You know, you have people like Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. Then you have people like, I forgot, this rapper, she's from the South. Young rapper, and she's also said that she was with Trump, and she got ridiculed with that. But she didn't know about what we were talking about when it came to the stimulus check. So when it comes to class inside the black community, mm-hmm. I mean, and I know, you know, you're from Haiti, mm-hmm. so I know you know about the class, the bourgeoisie, and all that stuff, right? But and we, as African Americans, even though we're starting to acquire money and wealth and all types of places, you know, sometimes we put each other down.
Yeah.
We don't support each other. Once we get to that, and once we get to that level, we don't support each other when it comes to talking about the vote.
It's almost like a competition for them. If you leave your community, you go to school, and then you come back,
mm-hmm.
everybody sees different.
Yeah. Oh, you think you're better than me because you went to school.
No.
Oh. And then the other way around, yeah, I went to school, and you're stupid.
Well,
you know, they do it both ways.
It goes both ways.
We fight. We inner fight.
Yeah. It's no competition. I'm still the same person I am.
I was when I left.
Why do you see me different now? Is it a competition to you, or are you feeling bad because you didn't do it?
So why do we see them different when we come back? Like, if we come back from, if we got all the degrees and we have everything, or we went to the military and we were heroes, and then we come back to the hood, and then we say that they're talking nonsense, why do we feel that way? Why do we feel that way towards our own when we come back to school? And that separates us also, where we can't come to a common ground and tell, like, people that think that Donald Trump or whatever, you can have your own opinion. Because remember back in the day when I was young, you couldn't speak about your political. You couldn't say if you were a Democrat or you couldn't say if you were a Republican.
It was awesome.
I'm older. I'm 59 years old. So it's you know, it's different. But how do we tell people? How do we communicate to each other? All right. Let me educate you when it comes to civics. Let me tell you that Congress puts this in, not Donald Trump. I mean, how do we tell our youth? No, don't shoot each other today. Don't kill each other. Let's go to the museum and check out these different exhibits. How do you bring your art into communities where people will be calm and start doing art and making things change through art and sport? And, you know, how do we do things like that?
It's all about the support. Support.
Support.
Support.
Money, too.
Money, and it, like, part of me is like, there needs to be structural change, so we need to, like, go get that money and, right, be lobbying and doing, like, that top-level stuff. But also, as I've been, like, kind of doing storytelling and some of the other programs I got involved in over the last year, it's a combination of those top-level things, but also you need to be able to have someone in your community who's going to grab kids who don't have parents, who bring them to stuff like this and bring them. You need somebody who's going to go to, an educated brother who's going to keep going to his same barbershop he's always went to.
Yeah.
And when somebody's wrong, he's going to calmly explain why they're wrong.
Right.
And, like, you know, on a variety of topics, ranging from politics to women's issues, like, we have to have somebody in those spaces who can speak people's language where they are. And sometimes that's your pastor. Sometimes it's, you know, your friend who made good and went to university.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a, you know, it can be whoever.
It's,
an auntie.
It's the guy who just came
business.
Out of jail in the it's hood, but got understands the community better than what we would have since we left.
Exactly.
Right.
Like somebody who's been there and then just being able to have conversations. You know, not necessarily like this. This is a little, this is wonderful, but it's not the, but it has to happen. Like where people feel really truly comfortable. It has to be like what's that idea of like having closed conversation, like this not for them, this is for us to get ourselves all on one accord.
Mm-hmm.
That concept needs to come back. That's like a closed conversation where we get together and we decide what it is, and this is what we're going to go out into the world and present.
Mm-hmm.
But without squashing people's like individuality and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, somebody has to be there to like get them together.
and let them know what's going on.
I think one of our biggest problems is okay to have agreement and disagreement.
Yes.
But the thing is, when you have a disagreement, some people say, oh, I'm never going to talk with that person again. No, you can't do that.
Uh-huh.
Even though you have a different point of view, and maybe if you keep that friendship, you're going to have a better understanding.
Yes.
And say, you know what, let me see it from your point of view, and then if I could go from it, or, you know, I could stick with what I know, but you can't erase somebody or your circle based on one thing.
Right.
That day.
You can't. I think we all at this table, I think that it all starts, and I'm going to say it, I think that it all comes out and all based in everything that we're talking about at this table is based in this thought of white supremacy. Now, I don't know if everybody agrees with this at the table, but I agree that there is a system of white supremacy around the world coming out of America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I say it because people like Hitler based his whole speech in Mein Kampf, based his whole movement on how we did it here. Now, I'm not saying it in a way to be, because, you know, I think that white supremacy is a construct. I think that because we see the lynchings that's happened, we see what's going on. I think that it's a whole, I don't know if you've ever heard of something called Bacon's Rebellion. You know about Bacon's Rebellion. And that's where the white started. There was no such thing before Bacon's Rebellion as something white.
Mm-hmm.
You had indentured servants, you had stuff like that, but there was nothing, you had the frontier. Mm-hmm. So everybody had to get along when they were coming to the country, and they were running from places. And, mm-hmm. you know, if anybody wants to look at Bacon's Rebellion, you could tell your mother, you could teach your mother about Bacon's Rebellion. But it's amazing. And I think that if white people would get a hold on the white supremacy and change the way that other white people think, like Dr. Alex Lichtenstein is doing, like my wife, Jennifer Robinson Pace, who's the CEO of the Indianapolis Children's Museum. If people would start standing up and doing things, I think it would change. We come together, just white and black, I think it would change the way that everyone thinks about us and the way that we think about them. And then we could live in a beautiful artsy-fartsy world.
In my dreams, we kumbaya and live in an artsy-fartsy
kumbaya.
World.
I mean, I just think that we all agree that's one of the biggest, I agree. I know that's one of the biggest problems in this world is how, you know, colonialism just destroyed people's lives, people's spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They did it through, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, I'm convinced. But they did it through religion.
Yeah.
And all sides. You know, remember back before, you know, the Moors, they were all colors. They were doing craziness too, but I just think that it could be helped a little more if we let more white Americans that construct, that white Americans come and actually help us, and they should speak more like we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be afraid. No matter who you, if you're a Republican and you like Trump, don't be afraid to stand up and say the truth. He's a criminal.
Yeah.
He's in a lot of trouble right now.
Some people don't want to hear the truth.
No, democracy is no joke.
We're about to run out of time,
yeah,
but like that's such an interesting idea. Like, but I think that people don't come out and say like that he's a criminal, because then that crumbles their identity. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
ooh.
if you poke one thing, that means you poking another.
Ooh.
Like that's. They came and showed us a 10-minute sign.
So we can't talk about that. No, but you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. You're 100% right. I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah.
It's bad because, you know, even if you don't believe that, even if you believe he's innocent, he's the most indicted man in the whole entire world. Not in the United States. And the thing about it is that, say he didn't do 100... He did. If he got indicted 120 times, there's got to be two or three times that he did something bad. And you know they're flipping on him now.
Yeah.
They're flipping on him now.
All right. So I'm about to bring a picture of my son to show you, because I had to look twice.
You thought I was him?
I had to look twice, bro.
We the same age now. I don't know.
I'm 70.
It don't crack.
I swear, right here.
Huh.
I'm
59.
Damn,
70. I mean, 59, brother, come on.
Hold on.
Come on.
You're blessed.
I'm glad to be blessed.
I still play ball, too.
Oh, you do? Yeah, but you look like you play some ball.
You know, I don't know how well.
You don't dunk. You dunk?
I, last time I dunk, I was 62.
Oh, so that's good.
In a league game.
And then you came down the knees.
Then,
you felt it in the knees, but I feel it in my knees.
Nah, look,
my back.
Boom, bam, oh, man. Oh, that's not going to happen again.
My back.
I'll be in touch with you.
Yeah, I'm around.
You too, queen.
Okay. Right.
God bless.
All right, bless you.
All right.
Are we finished?
Yeah, I guess we are.
People are still talking.
That was a good conversation.
Yeah, I agree with you with that when it comes to Trump. Because let me tell you, they're flipping on him. All his people are flipping on him now. One guy just pled guilty, so he doesn't have to do a lot of time. Mm. They're flipping on him. So he's going to do some time. But if he's voting in Biden, you know, I want him because I want my student loans, my daughter's student loans taken away.
He's
terrible too.
That's a whole different story.
But that's because I'm going to blame it on y'all young people. Y'all got to vote, man. Y'all got to vote.
Tell
y'all
gotta, your college buddies to
you
get gotta
out there
and vote.
You got to tell your college buddies, yo. Even though you might sound crazy to them, they'll look at you and they'll come. I guarantee you, two or three of them will come back to you and say, well, what you talking about? Why you want it? What you talking about to vote for? And even if you don't like it, you can say, this is why I don't like the vote. But it sets the tone to talk, because this country, there's something called democracy that allows you to have those earphones on. And there's countries where you cannot walk around with the earphones. Your mom can't walk around with her hair like that. She can't drive. There's certain foods that you can't eat. I've been a lot of places around the world. And democracy,
you can't help.
Democracy is no joke. We need to keep it, man.
You can't help a phone or any technology.
Now, you walk down the street, and if we lose our democracy, the first person, first people don't come after us. I don't care. It could be everybody. And I'm not saying woe is me. But what I'm saying is that's the history of the world. The darker you are, the more they're going to come after you. I mean, I got family from New York. My father was born, my father's father was, he had a suit on back in the 1930s. And I was like, yo, what's my father, my great-grandfather got a suit on? And he was, my family is Arab, his side of the family is Arab Moroccan. But they gave him a job as a marshal. So what they would do is they would put the black people in the front so you could kick down the door so you get shot first before everybody else. Mm. But I was, and that side of my family is so proud that side of the family was Arab Moroccan. But they don't talk a lot about my mother's side of the family, who's African American. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And this is great, 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 great. So I'm African American straight up. But my mom and Appalachian Mountains, they don't talk about that. So it goes to show you the whole line of the level that they continue to put up there, the lighter you are, if you're not from here, if you're not from there, straight towards the African American.
Sometimes it becomes how dark is your skin.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so proud to be your skin. Wait, why is it gonna be a different tone?
When? That's what I'm saying. I mean, you look at you go in that thing and you see them, you see the unmask, and you see how that guy's pointing at the dead body of the black person hanging. Look at their faces. They used to, but before the one over here, that one. They used to be a party.
Oh, that picture that's from, and it's right. Where was I at yesterday? And they was talking about that picture. Oh, I was at Indiana Landmarks taking a class. Mm-hmm. They started to, instead of showing the entire picture where, you know, it's like a sea of white people having a picnic.
Big children.
Children. Yep. Married couples. With you know, you can identify all types of different people, like, and they're all together under this, like, lynching, like, having a party. Mm-hmm. And they've started to shrink it, so there's less and less of the photo shown.
Right.
So that it makes it look like it's only these certain white people who were involved in it. Really, it's like their entire town was there.
Yeah, because they used to advertise it. Like, today, we're going to lynch Martin Small for winking or for sitting next to a white woman. Today, people would travel from all over. And then, after they killed you, you know what they used to do? They used to take souvenirs.
Yeah,
so they'd take your knuckles and put them in, you can Google this, put it in Macy's or in Bloomingdale's in the window. Ty Cobb, the catcher for the Yankees, used to have a lynching rope in his pocket for good luck and used to kiss it every time he went to catch the ball.
People don't want to hear that. This is what we need to talk.
And we can go back if the kids don't wake up and say, yo, this is what we gotta do to protect our lives and to keep my degree. Mm-hmm. You don't wanna go to college and get a degree and then all of a sudden they say, oh, you can't really get no job right now. You gotta go clean out the toilet. And you're like, what you talking about? And that's what happened to a lot of your ancestors less than 50 years ago. They came out of good school. The only, I remember reading about the school. I remember reading that there were teachers coming out of Yale that couldn't get jobs. So they gave them the job here at Christmas Attucks. And that's why the school just blew up. But the point of the matter is that it can repeat. That's why you always hear the Jews always talking about the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't, they like, yo, we ain't, that's why they got the fourth strongest army in the world, and they got their own land. It's oil and strategic, but it's the fourth strongest army in the world because they don't want to go back.
Yeah.
They don't want to go back.
Oh. Is that a natural place to, in your comment?
Yeah.
They don't want to go back.
Don't want to, no, no.
This is great.
Great. I hope y'all had a good discussion.
No, we did. Yeah,
all right. Did. I have to add a few things to your recording, and then y'all set.
This is Keandra Bills Freeman. Today is October 21st, 2023. This is People's Table number 2, Crispus Attucks Museum.